All right, so we'd like to begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, June 10th, 2013, at 6:31. Would you please take a moment to review the minutes from our last finance meeting and let me know if they may meet with your approval.
They meet with my approval.
They meet with your approval, Drew and Patrick. Yeah, minutes are good. All right, then the first order of business this evening will be Kara Carlson doing a free presentation on the implementation of math specialists for next year.
And actually, it's a request for one additional math specialist. And this was before finance last time, but we ran out of time and we didn't have time to discuss it. But it's actually been 3 years, kind of about the same time that we went to part-time assistant principals. We also went to part-time math specialists, one math specialist for two elementary buildings. And over the course of 3 years, we've heard from the different challenges and procedures and that. From having one math specialist serving twice as many teachers. And it's primarily coaching and modeling in that, but it's also been some direct service to kids just due to the fact that there's a need for those tier two and tier three interventions. And we don't have math aids like we do the reading aids, so it's really fallen a lot to the classroom teachers in that. But over the last 3 years, due to both RTI and then the new Common Core standards, it's placed kind of an increased demand on not only their time, but even helping the teachers and kind of make that shift towards the new standards. I included some of the data, which shows the number of kids performing below the 30th percentile, and that's where we start to need to give those interventions. We would be giving tier two interventions to those kids probably between the 25th and 30th percentile, maybe even the 21st. But you need to give giving or offering tier three interventions for those kids who are below the 20th percentile. So you can see in some cases those numbers have, almost somewhat, Churchill increased pretty drastically. But getting close to almost kind of doubling there as you look at Forest Glen and that. So anyway, we've heard this from teachers. We've heard it a lot this past year. Erica was at Team 21 when we were discussing some things this past week, and she heard it from some of the teachers at those buildings and that. But Ann and I, we had a conversation with the administrators to kind of find out what are the different needs of the buildings and that. And I spoke with the two current elementary math specialists just to kind of problem solve with them what might be some different ways we could approach how do we get some increased assistance in a reasonable format? And as they looked at how they've been working with the two different staff and the needs of the buildings, they would tell you that there are significantly greater demands at Churchill and Lincoln, particularly in the area of RTI, and you'll see those numbers demonstrate that. And they felt it would be manageable to have Forest Glen, the two smaller buildings, and Franklin, a math specialist, to kind of share and support those two buildings as they currently do. And so that's really what we're bringing forward, is to add back a third specialist.
You know, I think I would add to it as well the rigor of the Common Core, the work that's occurring this summer in terms of compacting and accelerating the curriculum, is a first step toward really adopting and adapting to a new, deeper curriculum that will change instructional practice significantly as well. And so I think there's been that demand as we've begun to look at the Common Core and implement certain strategies, but now this year really looking more deeply at the work that the committee is doing this summer to compact, accelerate by one grade level, find the right resources, and then provide that support to teachers as they begin to implement. I do want to mention that this is something that we've been talking about ever since we saw the new Common Core standards. It's not related to the implementation of Think Tank. In fact, it's quite separate from that. It's about implementing the Common Core. And if I were to make any kind of comparison, it would be that Think Tank was another strategy for addressing the Common Core. This is the strategy we're looking at in terms of support our teachers need for the dramatic changes that the Common Core are bringing into the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same discussion we're going to bring back to the board as Finance Committee approved last time, and we talk again about it here, but also bring it for discussion.
And we've actually, every year it comes up. We've heard it from teachers and that, and so this year we kind of, and when the budget was created, it was accounted for within that budget in case we kind of landed at this, we have to bring it forward.
Well, the numbers you've charted out, you know, clearly show an increase need. I look at it, this doesn't include the new rigor in the Common Core, because these are off map test scores.
These
are the same baseline standard. So next year, when you have increased Common Core, it's what the expectations would be for me, educator. 2014, you're going to see an increase in these numbers.
But is it the teacher? I don't know. You said that you guys talked about other approaches and other ideas to do this, and you know, I don't want to get into the details of that meeting, but it sounded like you landed on it's a resource issue, and resources are going to solve this increase. Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
The curriculum is fine. It's just a resource issue.
The curriculum will be altered. I mean, that's the work that's being done this summer with the math committee. But in addition, it's a resource issue in terms of being able to serve the students who need two things: being able to serve the students who need an intervention where we currently don't have resources for that, other than the classroom teacher, and two, to be able to work with teachers to give them the support they need in making the adjustments to the Common Core, the coaching model, which we currently have in place with both our literacy specialists and our two math specialists.
What they've currently done now, from a coaching perspective, is they really look at, you know, they kind of had to prioritize and kind of tackle a grade level at a time because they're just not there enough to get the, like this year they really focused on getting guided math up and running to be able to get into everybody's room. They also follow kind of that gradual release of responsibility where they work together and then the teacher kind of takes it off on their own kind of over time, and then they still need to touch back to see how it's going. We have said that next year it's an expectation that we'll do the guided math in every one of our math classrooms because of the increased rigor of the Common Core. There's going to be a greater need to further differentiate within that classroom. And so they're able to not only help provide those interventions, but also work with the teachers to further refine their craft.
Mm-hmm. So what was the second option? I guess you guys went through other ideas.
Well, we talked about what if you just had a reading aid, kind of like we have, or a math aid, like we have the reading aids, mm-hmm. and that would just be kind of, you know, a non-certified person. What happens is they start to talk about that is they'll say, well, we really need to find, like, really highly qualified. Well, you know, you can't, you know, we should ask for certified teachers, but what they were wanting was a certified teacher paid as an aid kind of thing. And, you know, they can only do so much, and they can only deliver something that someone else either designs or puts together because they're not able to plan and things like that.
The other piece of that is if you put an aid in every building, it's the equivalent of a teacher.
Yeah, but we would have a resource in every building, but in this is one resource shared in two buildings, right?
Correct.
So if it's a resource issue, you get four for one.
Well, and we did, in our budget projections, we did put one in each, but we felt because of the size of the Forest Glen and then the demographic differences between Churchill and Lincoln and Forest Glen and Ben Franklin that we could at least begin for the next year looking at reinstating one of those math specialists. And we would monitor that as well. If you're asking, do we really need two math specialists?
No. I'm saying you said that I can get a math specialist or I can get four aides.
Right.
And you said it's a resource issue to resolve, to help resolve these scores.
And if a math aide
as part of
the needs of the kids, but it's only going to be able to hit so many of them. Where when you, with a math specialist or a math coach, it's also assisting the teachers in implementing that the Common Core.
So,
and they'll still do some direct service, they'll have to.
So the successfulness of this math specialist is, in next year when we talk about this, is it the success that we're staying at the 2013 levels, or we're seeing a decrease, or what's this We hope we see a decrease. You know, we always want to see a decrease, but
right.
And next year we're going to say we don't want this trend up. But if we're trending at these levels, no one predicts the future. No one can predict the future. But
well, and to go back to what Joe had said too, the concern about with a new that you know that new assessment as it gets more rigorous. You know, what are our numbers going to look like a year from now?
And what are we going to benchmark it against?
Because
right now we're benchmarking it against the MAP scores. Next year we benchmark it against something else.
It'll still be MAP. They're introducing more of the Common Core. And we're seeing more from the ISAT, too. We'll probably see another shift there with an introduction of additional Common Core questions.
And we will see the first blush of that this year with the scores that the kids took in the spring. So while we would say we'd like to see a decrease in that, I think our best hope would be not to see an increase or a significant increase in students who are not meeting the rigor. But even if we do see an increase, I mean, I think we're prepared to address that over time. And I think what Karen suggested in terms of getting those guided math groups up and running is critical to having that occur over the course of the next couple of years.
I was going to say, when I was at Team 21, which I'll be doing a just a brief board report on, the what became apparent to me and some of the work that, Team 21 is doing that I was sitting in with was identifying their professional learning community meeting structure, which is one of the agenda items for this summer. And as they talked about how to plug in these math coaches, specialists, you know, one of the things that the teachers, at least at the table I was at, and I was at Forest Glen, is this 0.5 that they'll have in terms of the math specialist. So when we say resource, and I'm going to pick up on that language, that's the language I was using at the table. And what they redefined for me was there's a difference between having the a resource in a room like a math aid that can do up to this level. But with the kind of with the level of work that the teachers are going to be doing with regard to an accelerator to complex math, the math coach that really serves the teacher will provide a resource that's you know powered up on some level. It wasn't their language, but mine. So this idea of resource is that there's a real difference between plugging in a math aid, which does X and is certainly valuable, but and this is a question I asked, and putting in a math specialist that really coaches and front-ends a lot of the activity that the teacher can then go and do and then check back with them on. So there, at least at the table I was at, looking at, you know, creating the structure of these PLCs and trying to figure out how they can fit those meetings in, was specific conversation around that math specialist role and wanting to capture you know, that differentiated resource in order to not lose what we're seeing as statistics and numbers in terms of students developing. So, and we know that in a couple of our schools, the needs at the student level are different and require more. And so that is how they helped, for me at least, to define resource, you know, as an overall term, but different with regard to what the needs are going into next year.
Part of the outlook I'm looking is going to the next year. Because it seems the numbers and the change and the rigor makes, you know, it's logical. I mean, it's very logical that we need another math specialist. If we're going to see math scores that become tougher and more rigorous, are we going to see these numbers in 14 jump? See, Patrick, you were saying, well, where would we benchmark? Would we see them go down because we have another math specialist? You know, quite frankly, you're not benchmarking against the same number anymore.
Yeah,
you don't have a control group, so you're not gonna be able to say this person, adding this person, saw the results.
Yeah,
and I actually see them probably increasing more as I've read about the Common Core and the more rigor and what we've talked about throughout the year. You're going to see these numbers jump. It's going to be, and we're at. Last year, if you ran the numbers, we were at 118 per math specialist. Now this is going to be 110 per math specialist. So we're in the same realm here because our numbers jump. And my question is, You know, we were at 4 math specialists. Were we ever? We were at 4 back in 2009.
At the elementary.
At the elementary in 2009.
We actually were at 5. I mean, we had a district specialist and then one at each building.
Okay.
So to frame this from a financial standpoint, we really cut back, and we found that we needed to increase, but not to the original level that we were previously.
Well, we're not convinced we don't need to increase back to the original level, but we feel like this is a starting point to address the changes. Remember, too, when we made those recommendations in 2009, we didn't have the Common Core standards, and we didn't know exactly what that would mean. We were also facing a great deal of funding uncertainty from the state, and so what we were really doing when we made those reductions in 2009 was to prepare the district for the possibility that we would be in a position of instability due to changes in the state funding. So far, you know, we've been able to manage through that. We've created our long-range projections, which accommodate for some of those fluctuations, as well as look at what needs we may have going forward to meet the long-range plan in 21st century learning. I don't think when those reductions were made in 2010, actually, that we said to the board, we're never going to come back to you with a need for increasing or redistributing those resources that we are, at least for now, going to live without. And I think that's what we're facing, is that the climate of learning has changed significantly enough with the Common Core that some of those things really are resources we need.
At the time, districts around us were, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, but we talked about some districts taking 10 or 15% out of their budget, and we did 30. And we were at a higher level because we wanted to position the district not to be in deficit spending. And it was really the board that charged Ann, you know, to go back to cabinet and figure out how do we do the least amount of impact in the classroom, still retain, you know, specialists and resources, but also prepare for the potential that we're not going to be getting quarterly payments from the state. And every time Bob came to finance or a meeting, he would say, I haven't heard yet, not quite sure. And so we really erred on the side of extreme caution versus some of the other sister districts around us. So, you know, we were a part of the drive to do some position control on this.
Back then, we eliminated about $3.2 million out of the budget.
Right.
For math.
We had no math.
We're going down. Can I just ask you a quick question? This additional position, is this in the budget?
It's in the 14 budget.
It is in the 14 budget, so it really doesn't materially affect.
It's both in the budget and in our long-range projections.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that was going to be my question.
Yeah. Well, in fact, two positions were added to the long-range projections in case we felt we needed to. So we've factored in the maximum possibility to ensure that we would be able to maintain that over time. Because, like you, we don't want to request the addition of a position and then 4 years from now say, well, you know, we really don't want that position anymore. The other thing that we didn't mention, but I think it's in the report to some extent, is that as we move to a STEAM curriculum, we also want to see that the math specialists take on that knowledge base and are able to do the integration of the math and the science. And so as the new standards emerge this year, this is a good time to also bring someone into the conversation around the STEAM curriculum. So we'll have the same conversation. Maybe we won't have to have it as long because almost everybody is here during discussion. But we will bring this back for further discussion and hopefully action at the June joint meeting.
Is the reason that we're
doing both?
Well, we're bringing it in for the board meeting, is it? Is it time sensitive? Do you have this done?
It is time sensitive, and if you recall, we had it on the agenda for last finance meeting.
Oh, that's right.
We had a very brief conversation about it because of the agenda.
I do recall.
And so you did indicate that it was okay for us to put them on board.
Yep.
For the 2020.
No, to put it on both, put it back on here this year, but also bring it for discussion.
Right.
Any other questions for Karen then?
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
So then the second order of business this evening will be, as you know, we have a number of new board members, new finance committee members, and I wanted to give you a brief overview of what the budget, the levy process looks like and how it takes place over the year. It isn't something that we just start, let's say, in, with regards to the levy that we start in November, December. I mean, it's something that I'm starting now to gather information and projections on. And then the budget development is really something that takes place over an entire year. So in your board policy, you have Administrative Procedure 4.10. You have that in front of you. I've also summarized that in form of a PowerPoint to make it a little more concise for you. And what I've done is I've tried to highlight everything that goes on, or some of the things that go on a monthly basis. Right now, we're in June. We don't have any meetings in July, but we do go back to our normal meeting schedule in August. But I will tell you that we are already, we're just now starting the 2013 summer capital projects. We're already starting to think about what's going to happen in 2014. Reason being, a number of the projects that I bring forward, recommendations that I bring forward, we might decide May, June, July, August, we're making those final decisions. It takes me till September, October, November to create bid documents. Usually we like to be one of the first out on the street with bids because we feel as though we get significant, for lack of a better term, bigger bang for our buck. And it has been proven very successful for us over the past 5 or 6 years, really. So right now we're formulating, I meet with Karen, the building principals, the superintendent, and so forth, and we start thinking about where we're going to go next summer. So under September, really we've kind of started that already. The superintendent cooperation staff develops summer capital projects, improvement projects, which will be for next summer. And we will be presenting a resolution to the board in September that will provide us with authorization to begin budget planning for the next fiscal year. We then will move on into October, where we will actually bring you a formalized plan. If not September, we'll certainly bring it to you in October. That will give you an idea of what our recommendations are for the following summer's work. And then we continue to run that through a process where we take it through the finance committee, the board, for discussion and action, and then we need to develop bid documents and actually take it out to bid, where we usually go out to bid right around Christmas, right after the first of the year. We get our information back, and typically we're before the finance and board in late February, early March with those results. At the same time, the board will take a look and review the long-range operational projections for the next 5 years. That is a plan that I put together, that the finance office puts together. And what that does is it gives you an opportunity to see what our finances are going to look like over the next 5 years. Then we move on to November. That's when the board actually confirms, yes, these are the capital projects we'd like you to move forward with, and then we begin creating those bid documents with our architects. I will also bring you the tentative levy. I usually start that probably the first meeting in November at the Finance Committee, and then we'll take a look at it again late November, and then we'll be looking for you to take action. We typically only have one board meeting in December. It's like December 10th or December 12th. And that's when we're looking for your authorization to move forward with the levy for the following year. That's also when Karen begins. Karen, Lori, superintendent, begin their staffing plans, and building principals begin their staffing plans for next year. And then I will also bring you a two-year budget in preparation of you reviewing the levy that will be approved in December. I'll bring you a two-year budget projection, and then it'll also have a functional analysis which will show you
as great a detail as I can provide, what it costs for each individual program in the district, the number of kids associated with that with the program, and then also the number of staff involved with that program. We move on to December. You will then, in December, you will have a presentation by PMA, which is the district's financial consultants. They will give a five-year financial projection, and I'll let you know there's they have a much more dynamic type of program than what I'm able to do. I put together a financial program that usually uses straight line calculations. It's a 2% or a 3% or a 4% increase. It will take into consideration retirements, possible staff additions, capital projects, and so forth. Theirs is much more a defined and particular, but yet we still overall come relatively close with our projections. In December, the board would then adopt the levy. They'll continue to hear plans for staffing for the following year, and then we'll again continue to review staffing pattern priorities for the next year. You know, this might be something like math specialist or something along those lines. Again, continued staff development in January, and then we send out, my office sends out to all the buildings as well as the various departments, and that will be their budget request for the following fiscal year. So here we are in January requesting that building level staff and the departments in this building here are preparing for purchases for the following fiscal year. And generally, Mike, could you move on to the next slide? We generally make those numbers are usually due back to me in March so that I can begin to accumulate that information and then bring the finance committee. Really a preliminary, yet something that's pretty solid, and that by March we know we should have a pretty good idea what our staffing plans are. We have a pretty good idea in terms of what our final levy documentation should be due back. And then someone asked me a question, how sure can you be of state financing for the coming fiscal year, for the next fiscal year? We really can't be. I just received an email late last week that said, Joe, I think maybe you emailed me over the weekend, that says, how sure are we of receiving state revenue? Well, I just received an email from the state superintendent on Thursday or Friday that said that they were going to prorate general state aid by 90%, meaning we're going to receive 90% of what we received last year. So that's about $135,000 already for this coming fiscal year. So you get 22 general state aid payments a year. So what this means is they're going to eliminate the 21st and 22nd payment.
So did you anticipate any of that when you were doing the budget? Do you say, okay, here, this is the number I'm supposed to get, but I think I'm going to get this?
You know, a couple of years ago, I was very conservative in my approach. And the state actually came through with the money. Okay. Now, I'll say that somewhat, not trying to be overly funny or anything about it, but what happened was the state fell 6 months behind in its funding to local educational districts. So what our auditors did is if the state went out and they approved money in December or January, our auditors, although we didn't receive it until December, January, the following February, they accrued it back into the fiscal year that actually ended 5, 6, or 7 months ago. So I can never be too sure how that money's going to come across.
Wait, just remind me, what's the fiscal year?
Fiscal year is July 1st through June 30th. Okay. That is our fiscal year.
Right, so we're
just ending.
We're just ending.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think municipal forms of government have April 1st through March 30th, but generally speaking, that is ours. It's not a typical calendar year or a year that's followed in business, but that's how we deal with it in education. I think I was going back to Mark there for a second. We do send out a notice to all of our buildings and our department heads March 1st. You need to get all your purchase orders in because we need those those items or those purchase orders completed, and we want the goods received prior to June 30th so that it's paid for in the appropriate fiscal year. So April is when you'll begin to see a sort of a lockdown budget in terms of what our expectations are, and you'll get a pretty good idea in terms of what that'll be. Board of Education, we should be bringing you final staffing plans in April, and personnel recommendations are acted upon at that time. May, June, the Board of Education, you'll get an opportunity, as we are this evening, June 10th, you're going to have a discussion. I'm making a presentation. You're also going to have a discussion on the budget. And then the final meeting in June is when we request your permission for us to post the budget. It is required of us to post our budget for a minimum of 30 days. We typically post it last meeting of June. We take action on it the first meeting in August. So we get 45 to 60 days notice in there. There was one other point I was going to make on that, and I lost my train of thought. But what we're going to do at June 24th is we're going to ask you to allow us to post the budget, and that means that we will have it on review here in our CSO offices, we'll have it on review in all of our buildings, and then we also post it in a newspaper of general circulation here in our community, and that fulfills our requirements. Any questions?
Bob, just a context setter that I know you do every year, but in part of the timeline when you got the levy in December, that's the cart before the horse, because we really don't get our actual numbers until the springtime. So it's a process that we, I think, have gotten much, much better at in terms of compressing the amount of requests versus need.
We've come closer each and every year. I know one year we were only within $25,000 or $24,000 between what we were requesting and what we actually received. And Mike, I wanted to come. The question I, or the comment I had was a little unusual that your fiscal year starts July 1st, but yet you don't have to pass a budget until June 30th. You're essentially a full quarter into your fiscal year.
September
30th. Did I? Okay.
You said June 30th.
I'm sorry. I meant September 30th.
Well,
so you're
essentially
in.
Yeah.
You're a full quarter year into your budget before it finally has to be approved. And then, as Erica was saying earlier, I bring you a recommendation on a levy, and there's a lot of unknowns out there. When I'm bringing you this recommendation in December, really the only number that we absolutely know is the CPI, because it's the CPI from the previous fiscal year.
Yeah.
We don't know what the EAB is going to come in at. We don't know what new construction is going to come in at. Two major driving forces. I'll give you an example. I have a close relationship with the assessors in Bloomingdale Township as well as Milton. Now, we have very, very little property in Milton Township, around $12 or $13 million. We have over $1 billion over here in Milton. And I call those gentlemen and have a conversation and ask them, could you just give me some idea of what new construction, because that's a wild card in our calculations. So I ask them, what do you expect the EAB to come in at? What do you expect new construction? And this year, they told me in no uncertain terms, they expected new construction to come in at between $10 and $12 million. It came in at $6.6 million. So a big swing there. And then we never really know where EAVs come in. It declined, I believe, 6.8 or 6.9% this past year, and it has declined at least two, if not three, of the past 3 years. So those are numbers that are out of my control. I call the appropriate individuals with the county clerk's office and ask for their professional advice and opinion in terms of where I should proceed with my levy. And they're the experts on the topic, so I rely upon their expertise.
Are they off 50% as well sometimes?
Are they off with regards to new construction?
Well, new construction, they gave you 10 and 12, came in at 6.
Calculations,
experts.
Yeah, they told me it would decline. And remember, we're a little bit different here in District 41. We haven't experienced
although it's a decline, it's not nearly as significant as some of the districts that have a great deal of commercial property, like 93 over in Bloomington. I think they went down 15% or 12% or something. So we have been somewhat insulated from such significant increases, but yet we still experience decreases in EAV. They expect that, as you look around our community, you can see new construction going on, you can see things starting to heat up a little bit. I think it may go down again this year, but I would start to see a return to increases. And
isn't it a three-year average? EAV three-year average over the property?
I think it's more in terms of Cook County, maybe not DuPage County. I was asked by a board member 5 or 6 years ago, we used to use 5 and 10 year averages. He says, why don't you just call the clerk's office and get an actual number? So I've gotten away from using averages. I try to use actual numbers. So I don't use that type of a process any longer. I like to deal with facts, and that's what we've been trying to deal with now.
And to give credit to former finance committees, part of where we've ended up was really getting much, much closer in terms of levy requests versus what we actually get when all the numbers come out visible. That was pushed from those finance committees to really focus the process so we should be more granular about it. So we're getting away from the averages, but really looking at what do we know and what do we know we don't know.
And that's why we tried to get away from the average, because we feel that we're making that call will give us a better, more solid number from the top.
I will tell you, just on behalf of Bob, that every year we have pushed that what we request in a levy and what we anticipate actually receiving. Based on our two-year budgeting process, we've been able to make a much more accurate, hopeful prediction about what we actually need. And, Bob will admit that I pushed him to get closer and closer. And I think this year he came up to my office and said, okay, this is, we yeah. can't do it any closer than this, because you obviously realize that if you levy less than what you need, that you will not be able to, recover that. And so we try to be as accurate as we possibly can, as close to the levy amount, but also try to provide for those nuances that we can't predict, such as new construction, changes in EAV that despite his efforts with the assessors, come in a little differently than what we expected.
They don't know those numbers until March. And yet I'm supposed to give a levy in December, a levy recommendation in December. So there's 3 months of data that's still coming in. And I will tell you, as Ann has just expressed, she pushes me a little bit closer every year to bring it down. And I have tended to sweat those last couple weeks before that comes in. But we've been pretty successful with it over the past 4 or 5 years, and we'll continue to use that methodology as we move forward with our levies and with our budgets. Again, one caution that I have, the biggest unknown right now, and seems to be for the past 4 or 5 or 6 years, really is where state revenue is going to come in, and what type of funding is the state going to choose to continue to push back to the local level?
So are you going to adjust the budget based on the email you received?
I will. Yeah, I will. You'll have a discussion this evening, and then we're going to bring it back for you again in late June, and then I bring you a final budget. That's probably where we'll start to make all those final changes that will occur through June, July, and early August, because I may hear, I may get an email on general state aid, but there's a lot of other factors that are involved there, and I would rather take a large budget document and be able to make those budget changes as a whole rather than try to do them sort of onesie-twosie.
Now, on the new construction, since they were so off last time, like by magnitude of 50%.
Almost 50%.
Have you looked at the building permits in the township levels to gather how many, they put estimated construction costs on the building permits? Have you get a sense of that?
We've looked at building permits, and there was a time there were only, to say, a few building permits mm-hmm. going through in a particular fiscal year. They're just now starting to come online, or they're just now starting to increase, but
I don't really have a handle on what the value is of those particular construction permits. And then we could look at if they're housing, if they're additions, new housing, if it's commercial or industrial. You know, we're a community that has 92% of our revenue comes from local property,
sure.
from local resources.
There's just two ends of the stick. There's the building permit, which usually has a construction amount put on it because it determines their permit fee.
Correct.
And it goes to the other end, which is the occupancy permit, because now you know the project's done.
Right.
And if you keep tallying those, you know, and the community should be able to give it to you. I'm not suggesting to do it. I'm just, that's one thing that's out there. You can kind of get a frame of reference when you get that number, that new construction number, where they're at. Just another reference point for you.
I have found the assessors, the county officials, a little bit more willing to work with in terms of providing me with are their best estimates. Maybe I should call the village because I haven't had that type of relationship. They seem rather non-committal at times.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
Any other questions then? So, in finalizing then, we will bring this, we're going to have a discussion this evening. We will bring you the budget again on June 24th, and all that is looking for your permission to go out and post. We post the next day. It generally goes on display for 45 to 60 days, and then we'll bring it to you for final action approval in early August.
The law does not require that we post the budget for that many days.
No, it does not. The law
just because of the way that we take our action.
The law requires 30 days notice.
Well, to sum up kind of what you said, and I really address this more to the new members of the planning committee, is that Bob has done such a wonderful job for us, and where he has made finance kind of where it is, where the activity and the excitement is. So, good job.
Appreciate it. And if you have any questions, don't be afraid to email or give me a call. I'll do my best to answer as quickly as possible.
Well, this is our final finance meeting of the year, and thanks to Bob for giving up that time at the end of the month so that we can have a little different format for our board meeting and make a workshop on facilities, which certainly comes under his purview as well. But thank you, Bob, for a great year of finance committee, and thank you to the finance committee, both past and current, who have helped to move us forward in adhering to our budget plan and aligning that with our long-range plan. So, great year. Thanks,
Bob. Next meeting will be on the master facility plan and the work that we've done over the past year on that. So, thank you.
Thanks, Bob.